I don't think there'd be anybody who would disagree with me when I make the claim that the world seems to be into a dreadful state these days. There's trouble in on every hand. You will have to listen to the news or read newspapers if you do that. Watch the BBC website or whatever it is. War and disease and trouble and confusion seems to be the order of the day. I wonder why it is. I think many people, most people would agree that we're in trouble, but I get the feeling that many people are not interested in the cause, the root cause of all this trouble and confusion. It's rather like the people who go to the doctor, the GP. Most of them are more interested in their symptoms and getting something for their symptoms than they are in the cause of their disease and the fundamental cure. They want something to take away the pain. I remember a dermatologist coming into my gallery many years ago, and he was explaining to me the difficulties of his speciality, diseases of the skin. And he gave an illustration of how people have wrong expectations. He would get a teenage girl come in with some dreadful skin condition, and he would examine her and so on and say, well, this will take so many months or whatever it was. This course. Oh, she said, I've got a date this evening. She really expected that she'd see this consult. Have this consultation, and the chap would give her some cream which she could rub on at 10 o'clock in the morning, and by 7 o'clock the skin would be cured. She wasn't interested in what was behind it or what the real cure was. She just wanted to be released from her symptoms. And I guess we're all a bit like that. We want a tablet to take away the discomfort. We'd like it put right very easily. But GPs, doctors, consultants who go for the symptoms and don't bother too much about the causes are very dangerous doctors. Indeed, they're worse than dangerous. They should never be in that profession. I remember a GP in America looking at me, and he said this and this and so on. He said, what you need is this, and he mentioned a drug. But he said, before I prescribe it, he said, I'll take a blood test. Because, he said, it could be that the underlying cause here is trouble with a certain gland. And I'll take a blood test. And he said, of course, this is America. He said, if you ring me at 7:30 tomorrow morning, he said, I'll tell you the result. And I rang at 7:30 the next morning, and he said, you take the drug. It's not that gland. But he had to make sure before he masked that possible trouble with this drug. I remember this very same drug that this doctor was talking about and gave to me. I remember some time later staying with a friend, and he had bad asthma, and we're talking about his medication, and he was taking a certain drug for a certain disease. And I said, you should never be taking that. He said, why? I said, well, you've got asthma. That drug, which I knew about, had a very bad effect on the lungs and could be fatal. He talked to his doctor and he was immediately taken off. You see, if you just play with symptoms and you don't go for causes, you could be in trouble. Why is the world in such a state? Why is mankind like it is? I mean, take the last century. 100 years ago, you know, they were talking, were they not, about the war to end all wars. And And the soldiers were coming home to a country fit for heroes to live in. Well, it wasn't the war to end all wars, was it? It was just postponing that war for another 25 years until the real war took place in 1939. But that war didn't end it either. I can remember the Korean War, the Vietnamese War. I think there's been some wars in Iraq and Iran and Kuwait, and there's something going on in Ukraine as I speak to you. Why is it like this? Man is so clever. Bit of plastic. A bank card, yeah. Debit card. That's a remarkable piece of plastic, I'll tell you. Do you know what's inside there? There's a huge amount of wire in there. There's a computer in there. And there's all sorts of things in there that I don't know. That communicates by electronic means with a place in London. Well, I think it's in London, but they won't tell me where it is. It's highly secret. Man is very clever, isn't he? Inventing that. Getting men on the moon. Why can't he live in some kind of peace? He's so clever. Why can't he sort it out? What's the trouble? Well, causes. What's the cause of all this trouble? If you ask the men at Cambridge, many of them, they'll tell you it's all to do with the survival of the fittest and fate, and all that kind of thing. If you ask politicians, they'll talk about conditions and housing and education and all that kind of thing. The philosophers will have their ideas. They're dealing with symptoms. This morning, I just want to take you to what I'm sure is the cause. Now, a year or two back, you remember, Gabriel asked me to speak on the subject of man. I told you at the time I didn't want to do it, but I'm glad I did. I want to come back to that subject and take it a bit farther. Now, you're not going to, some of you are going to be amazed at this, but somebody like me believing this, but where do we find the root cause for all this trouble in the world? I mean, it's not just in nations. Nations are made up of men. Where does the trouble arise? Where does it come from? Well, I'm convinced, absolutely convinced, there's only one book that tells us. And that's the book I've got open in front of you. And what is more, the Bible, I am convinced that the first 11 chapters of Genesis have got within them the seed of all the root cause of all the trouble and sickness and sorrow and misery and wretchedness that's in the world. It's not just in Ukraine, you know. There are people in Piddly this morning as I speak. Their lives are an utter mess and they're in terrible pain and anguish, even as I speak. I know round here they've probably got very nice houses and two or three cars in the drive, with very late number plates, very good. But their hearts are aching in many cases, I tell you. I'm sure it's so. Why? Well, I say the first 11 chapters of Genesis will tell us. Let me briefly remind you. First chapter, God created. Let's get that fact down first of all. God created. Chapter 3, man rebelled and fell. Read Genesis 3 and see the curse that you find laid out by God upon mankind for the fall. Let me just give you one example. I've done a lot of gardening in my time, and I've known people who've been come late in life who want to start a garden. And they have judged gardening by what they see on the telly. You know what happens on the television. So a lorry load of men and women turn up with all the kit and all the equipment and all the expensive plants. They labour away for 25 minutes. And after the 25 minutes, they've set up a garden. It's all blossoming lovely. The decking is down. Everything is wonderful. What they don't do is come back in 3 months, 6 months, a year's time. Actually, they came back the next morning. They'd find some things that I've found. I put out bedding plants. They look lovely at 6 o'clock in the evening. 6 o'clock in the morning, they're dying. Why? Because cutworms eating it. Pests, diseases. That planking is rotting away underneath. Blight has come. All that. Genesis 3. Gardening is not what you see on television. It's what you read in Genesis 3. Why are there so many Irish people in America? Because of potato blight in the 19th century. A small spore, born on the wind in the summer, early summer, in the damp atmosphere of Ireland, the spore settles on the leaves of the potato plant. And when the farmer digs the potatoes, unknown to him, the spores just touch the surface of the potato. That's all. He puts them in a sack and in a clamp, and he goes back a week later and they're a rotten mess. The blight has destroyed them. The potato famine in Ireland in the 1840s, I think it was. That's why there was a mass exodus to America. Genesis 3. What's Genesis 3 about again? God gives the cure. I'll come back to that. What's Genesis 4 about? Murder. Man's going to pieces very rapidly. What's Genesis 6, 7, 8 and 9 about? The wickedness of man is so bad that God says he will flood the world and destroy it. I know the clever people today laugh at these 11 chapters. We'll come to chapter 11 now. I know they laugh at it, and I believe Satan is behind it, because I think they are very important chapters, because they tell us the root cause of our trouble. And the chapter I've got before you this morning, well, the verses I've got for you, are in Genesis chapter 11. I believe this chapter, these first few verses, these verses 1 to 9, go a long way to telling us why we're in such a mess today. Genesis chapter 11, verse 1. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east, this is men, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said to one another, go to, let us make brick, and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime or bitumen for mortar. And they said, go to, let us build a city and a tower, whose top may reach unto heaven. And let us make a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language. And this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of the earth. Now, just in case you thought that I was being a bit over the top about the troubles and so on, let me just read to you some lines that a man wrote. I wonder if you know who this man is. He's a well-known man, and I wonder if you know when he wrote them. And he wrote this: profaneness, riot, lust and pride are signs that mark the present times. Profaneness, riot, lust and pride are signs that mark the present time. Well, that was written in the 1700s by a man called John Newton. That's what John Newton saw as he looked out of his window. I agree with John Newton, but I don't think it's just in the 1700s. I think those are the marks of our present time. Why? Well, I've briefly gone over it, Genesis 1 to 11. What does this Genesis 11 have to say about this? It sounds like an interesting Sunday school story. You can have it on the chart next time I come. Tower of Babel, a story for the children. I believe there are fundamental, far-reaching principles in this chapter. And I'll just put them to you. First of all, you've got to realize what's going on here. The whole earth was of one language, one speech. It came to pass, they journeyed and so on. You've got to realize that there's a word that's not written here, but this is what's going on. What's going on here? Rebellion. It's another mark of the fallen state of man, which is rebellion against God. What do I mean? Well, Genesis chapter 9, after the flood, what did God say? He wanted man, he commanded man, he said to men, go across the world, become nomads, travel across the world, and fill the whole earth. This is what God commanded, Genesis chapter 9. If we read here that these men came, they were journeyed from the east, and they came to Shinar, and they found this plain, and they dwelt there. Now, just pause a minute. What's going on here? God has said, do this. And what is man saying? No, we're going to settle here. We're not going to keep moving. We're going to settle here. And what is more, we're going to do more than settle. We're going to build a city and all the rest of it. Now, can you see what I'm trying to make the point, feebly, I suppose, but I'm trying to make the point. The point here is this, that these men are already setting up in rebellion against God. It comes from the fall. This is what Adam did. He rebelled against God. And that's why the curse of Genesis 3 came in. That is why the flood came in. And here we see another episode. After the flood, men are still not learned. They're saying to God, in effect, no, you want this, you command this, but no, we're having it this way. And they talk to each other. They have a conference. Man loves conferences. By the way, I'm going to call this discourse Babel then and now. These things are still being worked out today, then and now. Men still love conferences. Churchill clung to power in the 50s. Why? Because he was always hoping for a summit with the Russians. He thought by talking to them, he could get some way with peace or whatever. Men always love conferences, talking. planning. And you get it here. They said to one another, verse 33. And they said, verse 4, go to, let us build. Men are full of schemes. Now, let me make a point here. Martin Lloyd-Jones, when he preached on this passage, entitled his sermon, Babel, the Tragedy of Man. The Tragedy of Man. And he made the point in his discourse about this tragedy, and he's quite right. He made the point, and you look at it here, and you can see from this passage, Genesis 11, you can see how smart man is. God created man with tremendous powers, and even after the fall, he still possesses those powers. You know, it's a bit of plastic. I mean, I just stick it on the old machine and it beeps. But the people that have thought this out, and the amount of engineering that is in this bit of plastic, is phenomenal. And I'm not belittling it. I've driven here today in that piece of metal out there. How it works, I've got a rough idea. But the engineering, the skill in the thing that made that work. These electric lights, you know. Somebody's got some brain, something. Man's got brain. What do we see here? Look. And it came to pass that they journeyed, they found a plain, and they said, we'll make some brick. Where did they get that from? Where did they get it from? Well, I don't know. But I don't think it takes a genius to work it out. The tragedy of man is, though he is so bright, this is Lloyd-Jones' point, the tragedy of man is, though he's so bright, it goes wrong. A man can send a rocket to the moon, but he can't control his pride or his jealousy. What's gone wrong? Now, where's the skill of man here? Well, I can only assume, I don't know what you think, they saw the effect of the sun on clay. They observed that when the sun baked clay, it became very hard. And so they said, look, and they called it brick. Bedford, where I used to live, is full of brickworks. The clay there. The London Brick Company. Plenty of clay in London. Bricks. Somebody must have observed it. And put two and two together and made four. You remember Jenner? He lived in a time when smallpox would cause tremendous damage, hurt, death, leave tremendous sores and scars upon men and women. I remember in the 50s. There was a smallpox outbreak in England. And I remember one Saturday, as a boy queuing up at Speedwell swimming bath to get a jab against smallpox. It was a terrible disease. But Jenner noticed that a certain class of people, milkmaids, didn't catch smallpox. And he wondered why. And it was because, of course, they were handling cattle. And cattle have cowpox. And he thought about it. And he decided that because they'd caught cowpox, they didn't get smallpox. So he took his son, and he scratched his skin, and he inserted cowpox into him. But the boy was immunized against smallpox. He had discovered vaccination. Millions have not died of diphtheria. My mother had diphtheria. It's a wonder I'm here. She had it when she was six. It's a wonder I'm here. Meningitis. Many, many diseases. By that one observation. In 1928, Alexander Fleming came back from holiday And he looked through his petri dishes. He was studying a certain microbe. And the petri dishes, those little dishes, he put some jelly there and he put the microbe on there. And he expected, after these several days, he expected the surface to be covered with this disease, this microbe. And petri dish after petri dish was covered with this microbe. But one dish had a circle, a blank circle, with a small dot in the middle. Fleming didn't chuck it out of the window. He thought about it. He had a look at that dot. He had discovered penicillin. Penicillin. That saved a lot of diphtheria problems, I think. One man saw a kettle lid bobbing up and down. That's where steam engines come. That's where our electricity comes. Man is very clever. But he can't control the lust and the profaneness. Why not? Anyway, he says, with his skill and wisdom, this will help him to resist God even further than he was already planning to do. And this manifests itself like this. We're going to build a city. And we're going to build a tower. Do you know, it's remarkable. There is within man this desire to build high and to build great. It's not just here in Babel, in China. For example, if you took a helicopter flight low over South America, over the tropical forests in Mexico, what would you see? Well, you would see an enormous number of trees, tremendously green and vibrant and luxurious. But if you notice, as you flew over there, you would see, strangely, in the middle of these jungles, buildings. Men have examined these buildings. And if you go down into the jungle, into these buildings, this is what you find. Although the jungle has reclaimed these buildings, you can see that they were built by some Indians of some sort, some many, many, many centuries ago. But these people built enormous buildings and walls, great big amphitheatres, with all one purpose in mind. They were trying to placate, to honour and to magnify their names by exalting their god, the rain god. Rain was important for the jungle, of course, the tropical forest. These people have died out and the jungle has reclaimed their buildings. But the buildings are still there. You see, these people wanted a building, Stonehenge. They dragged these stones from Wales. Why? Buildings. Why? Petra. In the desert in Arabia. These buildings carved into the rock. These great, massive buildings. Rome. Greece. Nineveh. Huge buildings. In our own times, what's the skyline in Seattle, or New York, or London, or Hong Kong, or Dubai? What is it? Up, up, up. Massive buildings reaching up into the sky. It's built in man. They want to get up, a name for themselves. This is the biggest building in London, tallest. Ah, this is the biggest, tallest building in Europe. This is the tallest building in the world. It's in man. You see, it's here. In Genesis 11. Adolf Hitler. What was his great concern? His great interest in the Second World War? Well, of course, it was the war in the East. Yes, of course. Yes, but that... No, that's not his real main interest, but that he had to fight that, yes. Well, his love of films, yes. He watched several films every night. Yep. But his great love, he never gave it up. He was always doing it. Was talking to his architect, Speer, about the great city that he was going to build at Linz and in Berlin. He was going to build a city that would outdo Rome, that would outdo Athens. It's been said about Speer that no building was tall enough, no hall was large enough. Speer's father was an architect, and he saw his son's plans and he said, "It's madness." Hitler lost himself in the fantasy of building a city that would mark 1,000 years Reich. I put it to you that he was living Genesis 11 all over again. It lasted from 1933 to 1945 when it ended in rubble. That is what I see in Genesis 11. And God says, and he does it through, he explains this through a picture. God often speaks in the Bible as though he were a man. And it says here that God said, "We'll go down and find." I mean, God doesn't have to come down and find. But he's speaking in these terms so that we'll understand. God investigates this. He probes this. And he sees what's going on. He can read their hearts. He can see what they're doing. Their cleverness, their skill has put it all together, and they're going to sort it all out, and they're going to plan this great city and this great tower, make a name for themselves. You've heard of the Victoria Falls, haven't you? You've heard of Jamestown? I used to live in a place called Lowestoft. That means it was the toft of a man called Low. I don't know who Low was, but he lived there, and he had a farm or a habitation somewhere, and that was where Low lived, and that became Low's Toft. Yeah. Men are clever in schemes and their conferences, and they're uniting together. I mentioned 100 years ago, end of the First World War, Woodrow Wilson brought into the world that wonderful organization called the League of Nations. So that was going to solve all the problems and take away all the wars that ever should be. It collapsed within a few years. Why? Well, the Russians and the Japanese had a war. China had a war. Italy and Germany started messing about with people. Nobody listened to it. The whole thing collapsed. Of course, we've done better. We've invented the United Nations. That stopped a lot of wars. I've listed them. Korea, Vietnam, and so on. The Balkans. It's gone wrong, my friend. God has come down to Genesis 11. He's come down to these people, and he has confused their language. He has put confusion in the human race. It's a very interesting opening verse. "And the whole earth was of one language and one speech." God has confused that one language and one speech. So men find it difficult, more difficult than it used to communicate with each other. I don't know if you've had the experience of ever traveling in America. I have. And I remember once saying something in a conversation. I used what I would consider just an ordinary English idiom. I said something, and somebody took me aside and said, "You shouldn't say that." And they explained to me what I just said. What I said was in UK English was perfectly acceptable, but in American English it was saying something very different. Communicating, even in the same language, one speech. I remember, again, I was in my shop and I was just about to go to America and somebody came in and I was doing some painting and I was using some bits of kit like that. And he said to me, "By the way, when you're in America, don't ask for one of them." And he pointed to something on my desk. "Oh," I said, "why not?" He said, "Because it means something very different over there." Same word. The confusion in the human race. Nixon, I've told you this illustration before, but I remind you of it. When President Nixon was in China, his interpreter, American interpreter, fell ill, I think, or something happened, I don't know what it was now, and he had to rely upon the Chinese to give him an interpreter. I don't know how this crazy thing happened, but that's how it happened. And so Nixon was conversing with the Chinese president, whatever you call him, of the Communist Party, and Nixon made a proposal to this Chinese man, and the Chinese man agreed. But unfortunately for Nixon, he didn't have an American translator. The Chinese man did translate it literally correctly. There's no question about that. But the point is, an American who knew the two languages well, translating into his mother tongue, the American, would have said to Nixon, "The China's president has just told you he agrees, but I'm telling you that that is his way of saying to you very nicely, because the Chinese are very nice, but if that's his way of telling you he doesn't accept it. He was saying no. He said yes, and the translation came over, he's agreed. But the nuance in that translation should have been, he said yes, but he said it in such a way as means no." You know this when you read a book. You see words, and you have to know how to read them. Take the word "some hope." Some hope, yeah, it could be a glorious thing. That's some hope, that is. But I use the word "some hope" to mean that there's no chance of it. Where does this confusion come from? And of course, the confusion spreads into the human race. Why is there so much confusion and disorder? Newton's word, profaneness, lust, pride, boasting, want a name for ourselves. It comes from the rebellion with God and his visitation and judgment. One thing I have missed out, and I mustn't stop, I must bring this out before I finish. The early chapters of Genesis not only give us the cause of all this trouble, I won't go over it again, but they bring us the cure. Right in Genesis 3, we get the cure. Even as God is cursing the world, what does he say? He says that the seed of the woman will come and enter into this conflict. And although he will gain the victory over the enemy, the serpent, he himself will suffer in that. Genesis 3:15. God illustrates it by slaughtering the animals to cover Adam and Eve with skins. All this is a picture of the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, it's only in seed form in Genesis 1 to 11. It's only in the elements of it. It takes the rest of the Bible to work it out. It gets clearer and clearer as you go through the Bible. When you come to the prophets, when you come to the law, first of all, the law, as Gabriel was saying earlier this morning, the law had these shadows, these pictures, these illustrations of Christ. The prophets, Isaiah chapter 53, for example, they speak of Christ coming. Then you get the Gospels with Christ, and then you get the letters explaining the glories and the wonders of Christ in his salvation. I put it to you, my friend, that Genesis 1 to 11 contains the explanation of the trouble we're in. The cause of it is our rebellion against God. And it's not just true for nations. As I said before, nations are made up of individuals. The cause of our trouble is here, rebellion against God. But the cure for our rebellion is here too. And it's found in Christ. Man says, let us, we can do it. Man is still saying the same today. Man can make his own way. No, my friend. God has shown us that Christ alone. That's why I read Psalm 2 to you. The nations rage. Why do they rage? Because they imagine vain things. Why? Let us cast their yoke from us. Let us cast their cords from us. Break off with God. What does God say? I have set my king upon my holy hill of Zion. What did he urge in Psalm 2? Kiss the Son, embrace the Son, trust the Son, believe, rely upon the Lord Jesus Christ. That is the way of salvation. It's the same old gospel story. It's in Genesis 1 to 11. It's worked out in Psalm 2. It's worked out in the book of Revelation. It's worked out everywhere in the Bible. So as we look out into the world, I agree with Newton. Profaneness, lust, riot, yeah. But Christ has the answer and is the answer. It's not just true, as I say, of nations. It's true for the individual. So, Psalm 2. I have set my king upon my holy hill of Zion. Therefore, embrace the Son. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near.